infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Everyone here is mad.
Greetings, and you're listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Let's start tonight off with a little music.
I painted your room at midnight, so I'd know yesterday was over. I put all your books on the top shelf, even the one with the four-leaf clover. Man, I'm getting older.
of crows, which they mentioned in that song, did you know that they can remember your face? Well, one of the most enjoyable facets of studying other species is discovering the amazing things that they're capable of. And as humans, the things we tend to find most amazing are the abilities that remind us of ourselves, of course, because we're not self-centered or anything. We're always fascinated by parrots that can speak, bonobos that play Pac-Man, monkeys that use rocks like hammers to crack nuts, and so on. Now, this can create a bit of bias when we evaluate human intelligence in comparison to other species. And as Robert Brault put it so aptly, if a rabbit defined intelligence the way a man does, then the most intelligent animal would be a rabbit, followed by the animal most willing to obey the commands of a rabbit. Now, the better we get at examining intelligence in other species on their own terms, the richer the picture of their cognition becomes. And in many cases, the idea that some human trait or ability is utterly unique among the animals is cut down in the process. Chimpanzees and bonobos, which are our closest relatives, are most similar to us and do the majority of the humbling. Now, there are, however, more distantly related species that have joined into this game, and one such group is the crows, and this would be the corvid family in general. Basically, they can use tools, including traffic patterns, believe it or not, to solve complex problems. Now, regarding that statement I made earlier about them being able to recognize faces, studies have demonstrated that crows can learn to recognize human faces and hold on to that memory and sometimes a grudge for a very long time. Kind of like humans. Researchers from the University of Washington wanted to go deeper and understand how they do so at the level of the brain. They were interested to find out whether crows recognize faces using the same neural processes as humans or in another way with which that we're not yet familiar. Now, to find out, the researchers captured 12 wild American crows while wearing a particular mask of a human face. For 4 weeks following their capture, they fed and cared for the crows while wearing a different mask. The idea was to see if the birds would recognize one face or mask as the threatening one that captured them, and the other face as the caring one that brought them the delicious food. Now, one by one, they took the crows and presented them with a view of one of the two faces, or simply an empty room. Now, since you can't keep a crow calmly strapped inside a brain scanner while this is going on, they gave the crows a chemical that functions as a sort of dye or marker. When one part of the brain becomes active, it takes in this chemical from the bloodstream. Afterward, they anesthetize the crow and place it in a PET scanner. The areas of the brain that contained the chemical marker showed up clearly, allowing the researchers to see what parts of the brain had been busy while the crow was checking out the sites they were shown. From the images, as well as the crow's behavior, they were able to tell that the crows recognized the threatening and caring faces as just that, what they presented themselves as, no surprise there. Interestingly, they did so by using the same regions of the brain that humans do when they process images of faces and associate them with relevant emotions. Now, why is this information useful? The biggest question in science, what are we going to do with this information? Well, the researchers explained, understanding how wild animals integrate perception, memory, and emotion to behave adaptively may allow researchers to generalize important findings across species and sensory modalities, developing strategies to lower stress in captive animals, shape animal actions to reduce human-wildlife conflicts, and engage the public to appreciate the cognitive capacity of other species. Now, facial recognition isn't good enough for you. That's not a good enough, finding. Well, let's go further. Another recent study takes on a much more complex cognitive task, reasoning that some agent is responsible for an observed action, even when that agent is nowhere to be seen. No, the crows are not developing government conspiracy theories surrounding their capture and interrogation. That would be way too human. Anyway, the researchers gave an example. Say you're a bird sitting high in a tree. If you see a monkey swinging through the branches of a neighboring tree, shaking the leaves in the process, there's no mystery here. But what if you only see the shaking leaves with just a small glimpse of a responsible monkey. It may seem like a simple step to recognize that the movement must be caused by a hidden monkey, but think about how complex that thought really is. You have to recognize the pattern of leaf movement as different from the usual rustling in the wind, call up possible explanations abstracted from your memories, and select the one that fits the best. Now, researchers have tried to elicit this type of thinking from non-human primates, but they haven't had much success. However, the authors of this recent study are arguing no studies have attempted to recreate ecological situations where the ability to make inferences about hidden causal agents would be highly adaptive. In other words, we've been asking them to demonstrate these abilities in very artificial situations rather than in their element. So in this experiment, the researchers used 8 New Caledonian crows, famous for their use of sticks as tools to get, you know, food. And so the crows were placed in a room with a box from which they could retrieve food by using a stick. Near the box was a blind behind where the researchers were hiding, and a hole in the blind near the food box allowed the researchers to poke a stick through that would hit any crow trying to use the box in the back of the head. Now, don't worry, they didn't actually hit the crows in the back of the head. There weren't any crows that got injured in the midst of this. First, 2 researchers entered the room. One went behind the blind, and one stayed in plain sight. The one behind the blind would push the stick through the hole a number of times, and then both of the humans would just bail from the room. Now, in the second version, one researcher would enter the room and stand in plain sight while the stick was manipulated from outside the room using pulleys, and then they would leave the room. And in each case, the behavior of the crow was monitored after the humans left. They watched to see how many times the crow eyeballed the hole to make sure a stick wasn't coming out while it used the food box. Now, the idea was this. If the crows were capable of thinking that the stick was being manipulated by a hidden human, they wouldn't worry about the stick once the human behind the blind left. When the stick did its thing, but no human walked out, on the other hand, they'd be very suspicious that the stick would start moving again at any moment. And that is exactly what happened. When no human emerged from behind the blind, the crows were clearly nervous. They inspected the hole much more frequently and retreated from the box without successfully getting the food on several occasions, which never even happened in the first scenario. This indicates that the crows could not see the person behind the blind, but they knew that person was moving the stick. They didn't trust the food box to be safe until they saw somebody leave the blind. It is therefore possible, the researchers wrote, that the ability to reason about hidden causal agents is far more widespread in the animal kingdom than has been thought previously. Now, if you actually wanted to read that paper about the New Caledonian crows, it's called New Caledonian Crows Reason About Hidden Causal Agents by Alex Taylor, Rachel Miller, and Russell Gray, and you can find that on pnas.org. And, of course, this was just published on August 16, 2012. And, of course, you can see a video of their behavior, in particular the New Caledonian crows. Just go to YouTube and look up crow intelligence. But there's a little bit more that went on with these researchers and the behavior of these crows after the whole research experiment was conducted. Of course, they were wearing these masks, right, when they trapped, banded, and they were releasing them. Well, the crows were a little upset, obviously, so they started scolding him. And it wasn't so bad until other nearby crows got into the mix. And they were dive-bombing these researchers, like 15 crows at a time. And, you know, you take the masks off, they didn't bother them, they put the mask on, and they were mobbed by these crows. So, what does this, first off, make you think of? Remember the movie The Birds? Well, it's based on observed behavior of these particular animals. Now we know for a fact that these animals can recognize faces and associate that with behavior. And The Birds itself was obviously one of the biggest horror movies ever, and very iconic. It was a 1963 suspense horror film directed by Alfred Hitchcock, and it was loosely based on the 1952 story The Birds by Daphne du Maurier, and it depicts Bodega Bay, California, which is, and suddenly, for unexplained reasons, the subject of a series of widespread and violent bird attacks over the course of a few days. And of course, you know, there was Tippi Hedren and Jessica Tandy, Suzanne Plachet, Rod Taylor, Veronica Cartwright in the movie. And the screenplay was written by Evan Hunter. Hitchcock had told him to develop new characters and a more elaborate plot. So when they say loosely based on, they really wanted to keep Du Maurier's title and concept of the unexplained bird attacks. And as I said before, The Birds is a novelette. Now, it was first published in 1952 in a collection called The Apple Tree. It was the story of a farmhand, his family, and his community that are attacked by flocks of seabirds in kamikaze missions. Now, the story is set in Du Maurier's native Cornwall shortly after the end of World War II, and by the end of the story, it has become clear that all of Britain is under aerial assault. Now, the movie was released in 1963, and that was the same year that The Apple Tree was reprinted as The Birds and Other Stories. And, of course, it was also done for radio, which we're going to listen to tonight, from a version of Escape that was done on July 10th, 1954, with Ben Wright and Virginia Gregg. And basically, the author saw a man plowing a field while seagulls were wheeling and diving above him, and composed a story of these birds growing hostile and attacking. The east wind is implicated in the birds' attack, a reference to the threat to England of Russian and Chinese communism and the Cold War fought between the East and the West beginning toward the end of the 1940s. So there is your metaphor, and here is your story. I hope you enjoy the radio version of The Birds.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. In a farmhouse on the southern coast of England, the autumn countryside around you desolate and bleak. And you know that in the dusk outside, waiting patiently for you, silently watching for you, is an enemy from whom there may be no escape. Listen now as Escape brings you Daphne du Maurier's story, The Bird.
Third, the wind changed overnight, and it was winter. Until then, the autumn had been mellow, soft. The earth was rich where the plow had turned it. I didn't do the plowing, no. My wartime disability had seen to that. They gave me mostly the lighter repair jobs to do in the 3 days a week that I worked at the farm. Deborah and I had taken a cottage up here to try again, for the sake of the children. And it seemed to be working fairly well. I enjoyed my work on the farm. It was pleasant to pause at midday to eat the lunch that Debbie prepared and brought to me. We'd sit there on the cliff while I ate and we'd watch the birds.
So many of them, Max.
Yes. Well, the autumn's better than spring for watching them.
Oh, why?
Oh, well, in the spring they're content, they're full of purpose, they know where they're going, there's no delay. But then in autumn it's different. The birds that don't migrate seem to follow a pattern of their own.
Pattern?
Great flocks of them here on the peninsula. Restless, uneasy, wheeling, circling, coming to rest and flying again. The land birds and the gulls down there in the bay. Strange sort of rhythm in their movements.
They don't really go anywhere. Doesn't seem to be any purpose to it.
No. Well, if there is, we don't see it. Restlessness. They're more restless this year than usual, it seems to me. Do you know, this morning two gulls flew so close they knocked off my cap?
You said yesterday when the school bus let her off, there was quite a few of them overhead as if they'd been followed.
Oh, well, I suppose it means a hard winter. They always seem to know. Perhaps a message comes to them in autumn. A warning.
About winter.
And about death.
No.
Many of them will die, and I think they know it. Perhaps they feel they have to spill their emotion out before they die. Like people who know their time is up and run about stupidly, driving themselves.
You wouldn't talk like that, Nat. That black side of you that stirred up the trouble between us before.
Well, I'm sorry, Debbie. But it's come over me lately as I've watched them. The land birds mingling with the sea birds in a sort of strange, unnatural partnership. Land and sea. And life and death. That night it turned colder, and the wind strengthened. Around 2 a.m, the sound of it beating against the house woke me up. I lay there with this slow, even breathing of Debbie beside me, and I thought of Jill and Johnny in the room across the hall. We seemed safe, secure. And then I heard it, a tapping on the window. First, I thought it was a loose shutter, and then I realized it wasn't. I got out of bed, went to the window, opened it. Suddenly, something brushed against my hand. It jabbed my knuckles and then was gone over the roof and behind the cottage.
Yes. What?
It's all right, Debbie. It was a bird. I don't know what kind.
Bird?
Wind must have driven it against the window, so my hand's wet. It's blood. Hmm? Degadrin blood.
Good sleep, Matt.
Yeah. Must have been frightened and stabbed at me in the dark. Well, for the...
Matt, the window seat you're distracting.
I've already seen to it. It's some bird trying to get in.
Send them away. I can't sleep with that noise.
All right. Did you see that? There were half a dozen this time. They went for me. They tried to peck my eyes.
Oh, yes.
I'm not making it up to...
Oh, me! What? It's Jill. Go see what's the matter.
Right.
Oh,
coming, Jill.
Why?
Where's Johnny?
I'm just trying to get it. What's the matter?
Quick, get the children out of here.
Bird! The roof top bird! And my face!
Get the children out of here and shut the door. Quick! I pushed them out of the room. And now I was alone with the birds. I seized a blanket, and I used it as a weapon, sweeping it right and left. I could hear the thud of bodies, but they kept coming at me. They were jabbing my hands, my head, trying for my eyes with beaks as sharp as pointed forks. And I wrapped the blanket around my head, beat about with my bare hands, blindly. I don't know how long I fought them. Finally, the beating of wings lessened, and then I was still. I unwrapped the blanket from my face. A cold gray dawn had seeped into the room. The floor was littered with the tiny corpses of the birds. Robins, finches, sparrows, larks. Some had lost feathers in the fight. The others had blood. My blood on their beaks. Sickened, I went to the window. The fierce sea broke harshly on the day. But there was not a bird in sight. Not a sparrow chattered in the hedge, no early thrush or blackbird pecked on the grass for worms. There was no sound at all but the east wind and the sea.
Nat?
I'm all right, Debbie.
Oh, I didn't know, but... Oh, you're covered with blood.
Some of it's for dirt. Look on the floor.
Oh. So many of them.
Yeah, 50. I counted them.
It's horrible.
Come on, darling. I'll clean the room later when I have more stomach for it.
It must have been ghastly for you.
Are the children all right?
Yes, I put Jill to work making tea. Johnny's in our bed just now asleep. Matt, why?
The birds? Well, it must be the weather. The sudden change confused them. It has to be that.
The tea's ready, Mummy.
Oh, good.
Did you drive away the birds?
Yes, they're all gone now, Jill.
I hope they won't come again. Perhaps if we put breadcrumbs for them outside the window, they'll eat that and fly away.
Breakfast. Yes,
I've already had breakfast. I'd better hurry or I'll be late for the school bus.
But, I'll walk with you to the road, Jill.
Yes, I think that'd be a good idea.
I'll go get my coat and book.
I didn't want her to walk alone.
Matt, they wouldn't come back again.
All right. I'll go over to the farm and find out if they heard anything during the night. You keep all the windows and doors closed, Debbie, just to be on the safe side, hmm? Hello? Anyone about?
Hello, Mr. Hawkins.
Was the mister around, Mrs. Trigg?
Summer's the boss, but can you tell me where this cold is coming from? Russia? I've never seen such a change, and it's going on, the wireless says. Something to do with the Arctic Circle.
We didn't turn on the wireless this morning. Fact is, we had trouble in the night.
Oh, Kitty's poorly.
No, not exactly, no. We had some trouble with birds. Why, it sounds absurd, but they flew in the window and attacked us.
Attacked you? No, Mr. Hawkins.
No, I'm not making it up, Mrs. Trigg. There are 50 dead birds on the floor of the children's bedroom.
Foreign birds?
No. No, the kind you see about here every day.
Really, well, you ought to write up and ask the Manchester Guardian. They have an officer in it.
Hey, morning, Hawkins.
Mr. Trigg.
Mr. Hawkins been telling about some birds last night.
Oh.
He says they attacked him.
Attacked?
Hmm.
Are you sure?
Quite.
Yeah. Never heard of a thing like that before. Hungry, maybe. Looking for food.
Hmm.
You put out some crumbs.
Yes, of course. I'll be up tomorrow as usual. Good morning.
Ordinary birds, he said.
Attacked him. Now, what did he take us for, coming around with a story like that? He's a strange one, he is, with those superior airs. You see the look he gave us when we didn't swallow his story? Attacked him. I think he reads too many of those books.
Did you find out anything at the farm?
No. The Trigg's brilliant advice is to put out some crumbs. Debbie, I looked all around this morning. There's not a single bird in sight outdoors.
Quick, they've gone.
I don't know.
And the Triggs had no trouble last night.
Not only that, they clearly thought I was imagining it. Oh, I heard Trigg mutter something about my superior airs and reading too many books as I walked away. Nothing's real to those clods until it hits them over the head.
Well, they're nice enough people, Matt. Just that they're isolated up here.
Well, that's certainly the polite word for it.
I haven't been able to face going into the children's room. The birds...
Oh, yes, I'll go and clean it up. I suppose the least I can do is give the little beggars a decent burial. The dead birds into a sack, went down to the beach to bury them. The wind was bitter cold. I dug a pit in the sand with my heel and started to empty the sack into it, but the wind caught the birds and whirled them along the shore. There was something ugly in the sight, but the tide would take them when it turned. I looked out at the crested breakers, and then I saw them. The gulls. Out there, riding the seas. Thousands. Tens of thousands. They rose and fell in the trough of the sea like a mighty fleet at anchor, waiting for the turn of the tide.
waiting. They stretched as far as my eye could reach. They covered the sea. I started up the steep path home almost running. Someone should know of this. Someone should be told. But who? And then as I opened the front door, I saw Debbie beside the wireless listening.
Damage and even attacking individuals. It is thought that the Arctic airstream is causing the birds to migrate south in immense numbers, and that intense hunger may drive them to attack human beings. Householders are warned to see to their windows, doors, and chimneys, and to take all precautions for the safety of their children. Further bulletins will be issued later.
They've been repeating it every few minutes since you left.
Well, perhaps now those empty-headed idiots at the farm will know
Ned,
that I was...
You sound almost glad.
Oh, don't talk rot, Debbie. It's just that when people with half a brain try to tell me
Can't
that
Can't you forget that superior attitude of yours, even now?
Don't use that word superior to me. I'm sick of it.
So am I, Ned. So am I. You... Oh, I'm sorry, Dee. Things made me a little nervy, I guess.
Yes, I'm sorry too, Muddy.
Ned, one of the bulletins said the birds seemed to be waiting. For what?
I don't know. They said the birds are hungry.
What are you doing?
Yeah, the hammer. I'm going to get some boards and see to the doors and windows as they tell you to.
You think they could break in with the windows shut, the sparrows and robins and such? How could they?
I wasn't thinking about the smaller birds. I was thinking about the gulls.
The gulls?
Debbie, have you ever been close enough to get a good look at a gull's beak? There must be 100,000 of them out there, riding the sea, waiting. Morning, I worked upstairs, boarding the bedroom windows. And I wondered whether they'd take these precautions up at the farm. I doubted it. It's probably a joke to the Triggs. But according to the wireless, it was no joke. At first, some of the bulletins had been light in tone, but as the morning wore on, the concern in the announcer's voice became more and more apparent. Well, after I finished upstairs, I took the rest of the lumber down, boarded up the lower floor windows.
What they ought to do is call the army out and shoot the birds. That would soon scare them off.
Debbie, how are we off for food?
Now, Ned, whatever next.
Oh, never mind. What have you got in the larder?
Shopping day tomorrow, you know that. I don't keep uncooked food hanging about. It goes off. But I can put some things in tomorrow.
Tomorrow? It's only 3 in the afternoon and it's almost dark.
Why, yes. Sky, you look so heavy. Ned, what's the matter? You've gone quite white.
Look. The tide's turned. The gulls.
They've risen.
Circling over the sea. Not a sound from them.
Ned.
I'm going for Jill. I'll wait for her at the bus stop. You keep Johnny inside and keep the door shut. Outside, I looked for a weapon, but a hoe was all I could find. And I went to the top of the hill and waited. The surf was booming below, and a smudge rose behind the clay hills in the distance. It widened, divided, and spread north, east, south, west. It was a vast cloud of birds. It passed close by, heading inland, upcountry. They had no business with the people here on the peninsula. Rooks, crows, jackdaws, magpies, birds that usually preyed upon the smaller species. But this afternoon they were bound on some other mission. They've been given the towns, I thought. They know what they have to do. We don't matter so much here. The gulls will serve for us. The others go to the towns. And finally the bus came. When Jill got out, I took her by the hand. Oh, I just brought it along. Come along now, darling. Let's go home. It's cold. No hanging about.
I want to play a bit in the rain.
Not tonight. Now, come on. No dawdling.
Look,
Daddy. Look over there. Look at the gull. They're flying in from the sea. It's so quiet.
Yes. Do hurry, darling.
Where are they flying to?
Oh, up country, I dare say, where it's warmer.
But don't go so fast. I can't keep up.
Hurry.
The gull, they're circling. It looks like they're waiting for something.
Yes, a signal, an order.
What?
Nothing. Come on, dear, faster.
But I can't go faster.
Wait. There's Trigg and his two-seater.
Looks as though we're in for some fun, Hawkins. Have you heard the news? Everyone's gone bird crazy, talking of nothing else. I'm going to take a crack at them with my gun.
Could you run Jill home first?
Oh, yes, of course. Not room for you too, I'm afraid.
Oh, that's all right. Just get Jill home. Get in, Julia.
Would you like to come shooting with me?
No, thanks. Have you boarded your windows?
No. It's a lot of nonsense. They like to scare you on the wireless.
I'd board them if I were you.
Oh, go on, you're windy. Well, see you in the morning. I'll give you a gull breakfast.
I watched Trigg drive Jill toward the cottage, and then I followed on foot. Made me look up. The gulls were approaching. The order had been given, and the farm was their target. The black-backed gulls were leading, and they were bigger birds. Gannets. Terns. And suddenly one of them dove at me. Missed. Rose to dive again, and then came the other. Six, seven, a dozen. I dropped the hole, covered my head with my arms, and ran toward the cottage. They kept coming at me from the air with beating wings. Each stab of a swooping beak tore my flesh. I had to keep them from my eyes. With each dive, they became bolder. And they had no thought for themselves. When they missed, they crashed, bruised and broken on the ground. And as I ran, I stumbled, kicking their first bodies in front of me. Another aimed a feather, closer to my eyes, closer. And then I reached the door of the cottage. Let me in! Let me in! And then, above me, I saw the gannet poised against the sky for his dive. The gulls drew back, only the huge gannet. The wings folded suddenly to its body, and it tapped like a stone at me. The door opened, and I flung myself in.
George, what was that?
A gannet. It has split my skull.
Better now?
Yes, thanks. You're quite the wound dresser. Are the children?
In the other room. I didn't want them to see you that way.
No.
Your hands are the worst.
I'll be all right. We'd better all sleep here in the kitchen tonight. I'll bring down the mattresses.
All right. I'll fix something tasty for supper and we'll prepare.
Wait.
That sound. What is it?
The birds crowding against the outside of the house. They're trying to find a way in.
Nat!
No, they can't get in. I tell you, they cannot get in. The boards will hold.
For how long? How long?
Here. I'll turn on the wireless. I'll drown them out. There. That's better.
Yes. Anything so I can't hear the whole world.
It's only the fools that worried me, Debbie. But now I've noticed that the birds come in with the tide, but the tide will go out about 9 tonight, and we should have a lull of about 6 hours. I could slip out during that time and go to the farm, see if they can give us something.
Here's London. A national emergency was proclaimed at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Yes.
Measures are being taken to safeguard the lives and property of the population, but it must be understood that these are not easy to effect immediately due to the unforeseen and unparalleled nature of the present crisis. Yes. It is absolutely imperative that everyone remain indoors until further notice. The birds, in vast numbers, are attacking everything in sight. The population is asked to remain calm and not to panic. There will be no further transmission from any broadcasting station until 7 a.m. tomorrow.
It's like this all over, then. All over.
Daddy. About supper. Let's forget it. Let's all just try to get some sleep.
Matt, wake up.
Huh?
Matt, they're back again.
What time is it?
It's a lot of three.
The tide's coming again.
There's been a queer smell the last few minutes. Rather like burned feathers.
What? Burned feathers? The chimney. I forgot to keep the fire up. It's coming down the chimney.
No.
Where's the oil?
On the shelf.
There they are. You're squeezing through the chimney. Stand back. Maybe throw the oil on the coal. That'll get them.
Dad. Dad, I can't stand it.
Get me paper, wood, anything, it'll burn. Hurry. Their charred bodies kept dropping down the chimney. I raked them to one side, but more came. I threw on the rest of the oil. We piled papers on it, kindling, anything. The flames roared higher. More bodies. The stench was unbearable. I kept at it. Finally, they gave up. And I went over to the basin. I was sick. Around 9 in the morning, the rustling ceased. I opened the door a crack. Crushed birds were deep about the house, but there was not a living bird in sight. The tide had gone out. Now was my chance to get food and fuel. I ran all the way to the farm. There was no smoke from the chimney. I came around the corner of the house and stopped. In the doorway, almost covered with dead birds, were Mr. and Mrs. Trigg. What was left of them? Beside him was his gun. Beside her, a broken umbrella. I loaded the two-seater with all the food I could find, enough for perhaps 3 days, and drove back to the cottage. I told Debbie that Triggs didn't need their car for a while and had told me to take it. She said nothing, and toward nightfall, the birds came back again. We sat by the fire and listened to the rustle as they crowded against the house. But this time there was a new sound. They brought up their heavier forces against us, the birds with larger beaks. I could hear the sound of tiny bits of wood being torn away.
They stay till the tide turns. Then they leave. Then they'll come back again. They'll keep coming back. Matt.
Yes?
The Triggs. They're dead, aren't they?
Yes.
We're all alone. Strange. I keep closer to you than I've ever.
And it should take something like this to bring it. Debbie, you may be interested to know that right now, I do not feel very superior.
Don't, Nat. Oh, Nat. Nat, what do I do?
I don't know, Debbie. I do not know. I listened to the sound of the splintering wood. I wondered how many million years of memory was stored in those little brains behind the stabbing beaks, the piercing eyes, now giving them this instinct to destroy mankind with all the depth precision of machines. And switched on the wireless, was dead. I reached for the cigarettes. There was only one left in the packet. I lit it. I threw the empty packet on the fire and watched it burn.
Under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you The Birds by Daphne du Maurier, specially adapted for radio by Robert Wright, starring Ben Wright with Virginia Gregg. Featured in the cast were John Daner, Ann Morrison, Ann Whitfield, and John Dodsworth. Your announcer, George Walsh. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens.
So basically, I guess the moral of this story is be nice to birds because they can remember you. Can you remember them? And even if they're by themselves, they can get an awful lot of other friends to help them out when they're upset and they want to take that grudge out. Now, believe it or not, even people who love crows, who have lived with them for years, they can't even tell them apart. And if you want to watch a cool video, it's called The Crow Paradox, and you can find that on YouTube. I think it was done by NPR. There's also an interactive that NPR did called Crows Can Do This, But Can You? And there are crow scholars who, like I said, they raise, study, and even live with them. But once that crow flies off and joins a group, these researchers can't even tell one crow from the other. So, you know, good luck with that. Basically, you should just adopt the policy, be nice to crows. You know, if they're in your way, just go around the group. And so, they will remember who you are for years. If I was those researchers with those masks, I would put those masks in the bottom of a drawer in the back of a room, turn out the light, lock the door, and walk away. Unless, of course, they like abuse. You know, everybody's different. Anyway, look that up on NPR. It's a really fun little interactive to see if you can differentiate one crow from another. And remember the movie The Crow? Well, it was a 1994 American action film, and it was written by David Chow and John Shirley. It was, of course, directed by Alex Proyas, and it starred none other than Brandon Lee, and that was, of course, his final film appearance before his death in 1993. But it was based on the 1989 comic book of the same name by James O'Barr, and James O'Barr was just using his writings as a means of dealing with the death of his girlfriend at the hands of a drunk driver. It was later published by Caliber Comics in 89. It became a huge underground success, as we know, and adapted into that film. And there's been 3 film sequels, a television series, and numerous books and comic books since then. So, obviously, crows intrigue us to the point where, you know, it has become part of not just pop culture and our media, but it's part of our psyche, these animals that we see all the time. And now we understand a little bit more about them because of these cool studies that they're doing and understanding the neural process of this particular species. So, in the end, don't mess with the crows or they're going to remember you. Might not be today, might not be tomorrow. It could be when you're coming out of a grocery store and they're like, hey, that's that guy. You remember that guy? Don't be that guy. Anyway, that about ends this week's edition of Savage Science Radio. I'd like to thank Nick Peluco and the beautiful show graphics, Dennis Bond and Hawk Productions for that wonderful intro we use every week, and Todd Sheets, our executive producer and owner of Jackalope 105 FM. And until next week, keep your powder in your pants dry, and happy trails to you.